Welcome to Fathered. Fatherlessness is derailing so much around us. It doesn't have to be this way. Join us as we dive into all things fatherlessness, fatherhood, and faith. Fathered is a production of the nonprofit Rewritten. To learn more about Rewritten, you can visit rewritten.org. Let's listen.
Tell us a little bit about, was it like just you and your mom all the time? Was it like, when did you like realize like, okay, my dad's not around like he should be?
Okay, yeah. So I can say when I was in the second grade, that's when I start realizing the inconsistency of my dad. I'll call, he said, come get me. I sit on the stairs, waiting for hours. I remember this day like it was yesterday. I fell asleep on the stairs. My mom told me, like, hey, he's not coming. And I was like, hey, we don't know what you're talking about. He didn't come. So second grade, I started realizing, like, all right, like, my dad's here, he's not here. It's really just me and my mom who I can only depend on. So it was pretty tough, especially when me and my mom get into it. It's like I didn't have no one else to turn to besides like my uncles. So yeah, you can feel that. It really hurt.
Yeah. Just to kind of go off of what RJ is saying. So for me, my dad was, when I was younger, he was kind of like there and not there. And for me, I thought that was kind of normal. It never dawned on me that it was not normal until I got older and I was like, oh, I want my dad around more. But, you know, I have to call him to go see him and I have to do all this. Like, why is he not living with us? And then I would never question my mom, but I would just like kind of ponder like, oh, like, is this like what's supposed to be like every summer? I'm supposed to go stay with him and, you know, live house to house. And then when I got older, like around 12, you know, you start to mature, you're like, man, I really need some kind of guidance, but the person that I'm looking for isn't here. And I tried to get that guidance from my mom, because obviously, you know, living in a single parent home, it just wasn't like fulfilling what I needed. Cause I'm like, I'm trying to learn how to become a man, but I'm going to a woman to get those answers. And obviously she's a woman, so she can't really feed that hunger that I'm looking for. And it was unfortunate. Like, I was like, man, I really want my dad around, but, you know, he's doing whatever he's doing. And, you know, my mom and my dad are having these fights to where, you know, it's conflicting. Like, hey, I can't see because, you know, your mother's holding me back or whatever the excuse was. And so it didn't dawn on me until later on in my life as I was maturing. Like, hey, like, I'm actually missing that father figure that I'm seeking and like wanting. And it kind of fed into other things like, oh, you know, for example, like you, when you came into my life, it was funny. We were just talking to Paul, but you mentioned it earlier. It's like, I always wanted that father figure. But then when it came to like the discipline, like, hey, we need you to correct your behaviors. It's like, well, you're not my dad. And it's like, you know, you look to other people to fill that void, but then it's like, you kind of fight back when you have those opportunities to come, because it's like, you never grew up with that actual father discipline. So it's like, you know, I'm kind of going off the topic, but hopefully that answers your
question. Yeah, no, that like there's like a tension there. It's confusing, and there's a lot of confusion there. And something you mentioned, which we talk about quite a bit, is the anger and like just rage or being upset or mm-hmm. not knowing why you're angry. Like,
exactly.
Like, I want this person to help me, or I want some guidance. I want a father, but I don't even know what that means or what that looks like. And you don't really know why. Like, I know for me when I was a kid, it's like, why don't I trust anyone? And then as I started to get older, like connecting the dots to, oh, my dad isn't around. He's choosing to not be around the way he could be. And ultimately he died, and it's a whole different, you know, whole situation. But being angry. And then because of that, it's like, well, if he didn't want me, if he couldn't be around, like, how can I trust that anyone else is going to be around, right, want me or want to be part of my life? Like, did you deal with that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Well, I did. I do deal with that. I deal with it a lot. Stress issues, I want to say, because I deal with a lot of women, which is like friends and everything, and I see how they go about like guys, and they're so easily to be around people. Me personally, I'm just afraid to be around certain people because of what I've been through, you know. I've been through something really traumatic in my life that I need a dad for, you know. He wasn't present there. So in the mix of me going through all that situation, my trust issues got super worse to where I couldn't be around certain men or like guys that come around me. I always feel like they're like, you know, I don't know, like just there for the moment. So my trust issues were very hard on me. So,
and so as you mentioned that, something I'm thinking through, and we can talk about trust and anger in a minute with you guys, but protection, like feeling like I have four daughters. And I think not just with young ladies, but more so with young ladies feeling protected. Did you feel protected growing up?
Protected growing up. It was that missing. I only had one person. That was my brother. And I know he couldn't do too much. So I always try to stay like as close to family as I can, because I feel like, you know, you can trust one person and things can get bad. So I really stood on business by not being around certain people. And it was mostly men with that. So.
How do you think not feeling protected affects young ladies? Like, how did it affect you? How do you think it affects young ladies who don't have a father to protect them?
Well, this is a crazy story because I actually been kidnapped before. And the mix of me getting out of that and going through it, I was looking for my dad. And it was mostly like, I need to call my dad, you know, like this is something serious. Like, would he come during something that's so serious? And then I kind of feel like, well, maybe if I call him, I don't want to make it look like I went through something just to get, you know, that type of love from him. But I definitely felt like I wasn't protected during a lot of things. But yeah, the most big one for me was being kidnapped. So it was really hard for me to trust people after that. So that's what, yeah.
So the big impact.
I was too trusting.
Mm-hmm.
I let anybody come into my life, and that's just from not knowing what I needed. So, like with Jason, I was probably in the fourth grade, fifth grade. I didn't know Jason, and I'm inside his house. I'm playing this game. I'm eating this food, and I was just everyone I grew around, and I. Like looking back at it, it's just like I felt like I was looking for something, but I didn't know what I was looking for. But every, like, you want you too. I didn't like you, Frank.
I remember that.
But I wanted you there, and I didn't understand why I wanted you there.
Because he grew that. Frankie grew that on us. Like being in the apartments when we actually like found out about the learning center, it was very peaceful for me, like, to just go there. I wasn't saying that I was just destructing for no reason, but I'm like, I could do whatever I want. This man's still gonna accept me. Like, and I'm like, is this a dad for us? Like, and he's always like, you know what, just come here and do your homework. And I used to come do my homework, fix it a little bit, then I'll get bad. But it's like, Frankie forgave us. That's good. He forgave us for a lot of things, but you did feel that little, it wasn't even like you was like just my dad, it was like all of our dad. Like, we're going to Frankie's, like, Frankie's gonna. I was like, hey, I'm just go over there, take you over there. You know, it was very peaceful.
Frankie gave us the, as a man, the first, what is the word? You showed us what consistency looked like. Besides our moms being in our lives, but for someone who didn't know us and was just so consistent on who you are, and you never, like, no matter what we did, it was like.
Next day.
Hey, how you feeling?
You like, better Frankie from did
a little shoulder rub. Showing up
every.
You feeling better?
All right. I'm smiling really hard because to what you both are saying, like, I agree 100%. I didn't have that trust issue. I was actually, like RJ mentioned, like very open. And I think I was open. Well, I know now that I was open because, like what RJ mentioned, like I was looking for something, but I didn't know what that was.
Well, I think to your point, and that cut you off, but I think how it affects young men and young ladies differently. Dalia is looking for something too, but young men more oftentimes know how to protect themselves. They know how to like fight back. They get defiant. You know, it's like, you ain't my daddy. You ain't my, you know, whatever my father, you know, so you can't tell me what to do. Where young ladies might be similar, but they're more vulnerable because they're weaker.
That's how we are weak.
they're little, you know, they're young ladies and they're just not physically as strong and, you know, as aggressive. And so, and their rage and their anger looks different than a young man's, you know? And so, so you have different dynamics where oftentimes young ladies end up in really terrible situations. Not to say that young men don't either, but it's more often with the young ladies because they can't protect themselves. The father's not fathering, everything else comes into father,
which is the culture, which is school, which is politics, which is entertainment, which is, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z and Cardi B come in and start to be the mommy and daddy, which are not the best mothers and fathers out there, you know. But what's funny is people like them, and not Cardi B necessarily, but Beyonce and Jay-Z, they have a family intact, but they're preaching to young kids to tear apart their families, which is, you know,
it's confusing.
Yes, a lot of young people, you know, you have girls who are very confused, you have young men who are very confused, and then you see what's happening because they're searching to fill these voids and gaps with these things that are destructive. So for you guys, speaking of that destructive, were there any like destructive behaviors that you realize now looking back, like I was definitely searching for something and I started to become destructive?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
How many destructions can we talk about?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever you want to talk about. Yeah.
RJ, yeah.
I had anger issues to the max. Like, I wasn't the type of person to punch walls because I don't like hitting things. But the littlest things, I'm going off, I'm walking off. I am isolating myself. And I will sit in a room and think about running away or just anything that come to mind because I was just so angry and I didn't know where to put the anger. So I was just, I get very defiant. Like, you can't tell me nothing. And I will destroy myself. I'll stop doing my homework. I'll go get straight Fs. I didn't care anymore. So I can say that was my thing. I'd rather hurt myself thinking it was hurting others.
To get back at people.
To get back at whoever did something to me. Because I know you care about me. So now if I fail, you're going to be concerned. And I'm going to show you, like, I still don't care. So it was things like that.
You mentioned, I think, the streets and stuff.
Yeah.
Did the streets, did they ever call you? Were you ever tempted to go into the...
Drugged me. The streets drugged me there. And I had to drag myself out. And if it wasn't for...
What do you think it was? Like looking back, do you think, like RJ and Jason mentioned, you were looking for something and didn't know that that's what was happening? Do you think it was something like that?
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people without dads going that way. So I kind of feel like, well, they look happy and... Well, they're showing me that they're happy, so I try to go dig in to see what was going on, and it was nothing for me to dig my feet in that pond because it was nothing good for me. You know what I mean? But I seen a lot of broken things. I went into other people's home. I was getting treated, like, very good by other people's dads and people's moms. I felt, like, loved in some other people's homes, but...
That's typically, like, why people are attracted to the streets is because of that love factor.
The family.
Yeah, like
it looks like a family.
It looks like a family, and it feels like a family. And what you get from being in that environment is like, oh wow, okay, I'm not receiving whatever I'm looking for here at like my actual home, but the streets is giving me that, and it's really a false illusion.
Right, it makes you think.
Think that until you get into a situation. It's like, all right, now you have to defend for yourself.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to go to jail here. You know, you take the fall for this. So it's one of those trick bags that a lot of, you know, minorities, I feel, fall into just because of the illusion that's portrayed.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, you said minorities, but I think that's why we at Rewritten, we focus so heavily on, I understand race systems and I understand class systems and gender systems and all the systems that are out there. But I think, you know, we are a Christian organization that believes God designed male and female to get married, to have children and create a family. When that design is broken, and not obviously if you come from a poor, you know, community or, you know, an impoverished area, there's many more things at play to come in and influence and tear you down. But if that family structure is there, whether you're in a poor community or a wealthy community or whatever it might be, if the family's unit is intact, those kids and that family does well. mentally, emotionally, spiritually. It's when that family system falls apart. So whether you're white, black, brown, male, female, rich, poor, if that family unit falls apart, everything's up for grabs.
The lack of obedience, like, because my father never instilled, like, hey, when I tell you to do this, like, it needs to be done, and it needs to be done because these reasons. I never had that. And like, as I got older as a man, like, my mom, she tried to instill that into me, but like,
once off of it.
Yeah. Once I got older, and I was just like, all right. So, you know, once the whoopings stop hurting, I'm like, oh, I could, you know, this, like, I could do my own thing. And I feel like that lack of obedience kind of rolled over into other things, that lack of discipline, thinking I could, you know, do more than what I could actually do, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying, from what I'm picking up, because I used to do the same thing. There wasn't any structure in my life. So I lacked discipline, and I tried to push as far as I could to get away with things that I shouldn't be getting away with. So whether it was like at the job or with relationships with people, I would try to see how far I can go to get what I wanted, because it was selfish. I think another thing a father teaches is their children to not be selfish and to think of others. And the father serves his family well, which then his children see that, and then they want to serve well. But when you don't have that and you don't have discipline, you don't know how to serve well.
You're just thinking me.
Yeah. So you're figuring out, how much can I get away with to get what I want? Because that's what my father did. We're not even realizing that that's what you're doing, because he's not in the picture because he got what he wanted. Yeah, and that's like layered, and, you know, the whole thing.
I was about to say, man, we're going deep.
But, Delia, what were you going to say? Were you going to say something?
No, I was just...
I wanted to say something earlier, which you said, of going into other people's homes and feeling accepted. I used to do that a lot, going to other people's homes, and I, like, looking back at it, I would change. Like, I would do everything someone else's parents would ask me without question, like, because I felt like their home wasn't broken. Like, looking back at it, like, no, I don't, your home's not broken. I understand why my friends would be like, why not listen to your parents? Why are you not doing this? You got a great here. And so I just do everything. You don't want to wash dishes? I'll go wash your dishes. So I found myself just doing things I wouldn't do in my own home. It's like, I'm not defiant here. But when I go back to my own space, I didn't like it. So it was just...
It's funny you say that. Yeah, it's that family structure, that stability allows children and young people to be what they need to be, which is productive, helpful, you know, serve. Yeah, it allows them to, like, actually... It's like when you think of a tree, or you plant a seed, if the environment's not right, it doesn't grow well. But if the environment's right, it becomes an oak tree and this massive, really big, strong thing. But when it's not, so yeah, when you go into these spaces, it's like suddenly you can begin to grow and develop, thrive the way you should have. So now we're going to sort of transition into this next phase of the conversation, which is rewritten comes in. You know, our goal is to, not to play on words, but rewrite futures. So the stats with people that come from broken homes, like myself, like you guys, kids we serve, the stats are pretty bad. Like, it's pretty bleak. You can end up in gangs, homeless, on drugs, prison. You know, mental health issues, like, all kinds of the stats are bad. So we want to rewrite that future. So we come into the young people's lives, and through what we call highly relational mentoring, we try to ultimately point them to God as Father. And so that's kind of the overarching theme in our mission. So we do that by, Delia, do your homework. Jason, calm down. RJ, we got to focus. Well, you know, all that's part of the mentoring. It's guidance. It's saying, hey, listen, you're not going to do well if you can't get your homework done. You're not going to get anywhere if you just keep being angry and, you know, defiant. So that said, what was your guys' sort of like first experiences coming into rewritten? And like, and you can be honest, you can be like, I hated you. I hated the place. I hated.
Oh, you mean what?
I think I'll start with this one.
Yeah, I know. Go on. Yeah. So, what was it like? What did it feel like? And be honest.
So Jermani got to be like, well, that's my little brother. He kind of was like my dad after a while. Definitely when we found Freki, which is a learning center. I was very defiant there. I was very off the chain. You know what I mean? Frankie always, like he said, do your homework, do ya? That was definitely me not doing my homework. So, Germani pushed me to get there because I don't know how. He just clicked with you very well. And I want to say, like, church and everything, he liked it the way he was helping everybody. So he felt that dad figure first. Like, you know what I mean? He felt like he loved everybody here. So we're going to come here and, like, you know, don't embarrass me this time. Dalia, if you're going to come, come. And I remember coming. It was a little rocky, Frankie, but
what was it like? Wow. Like, tell me, like, what was that rockiness like? What if Dalia would walk in and then what happened?
Specifics.
Yeah. Give me some details. You would walk in and then what?
Everyone would be reading and I'll come in and I'm like, what's up, Frankie? And you'd be like, Dalia, shh. And I'm like, why? Like, what's going on? Like, oh, Dalia, go upstairs and do your homework. Frankie, why? I can't read whatever. Dalia, go do your homework. Oh, my goodness. Like, just loud and very, are you? What brings so much?
Yeah.
Oh my God! I could do what I want, Frankie. I'm about to grab a book and sit here and read it with you. Well, if you're not going to see if you don't do your homework, here comes this Anthony. Let's go upstairs and talk. They will go up there and talk. Like, yes, Frankie just want better for you, and I'm like, I know, but you know, just I don't know. But
is that what you said?
Is that what you said?
No. What did you actually say, Dalia?
Frankie don't like me. I'm like, Frankie don't like me. Every time I come here, Frankie's picking on me every time. When I noticed, I didn't think it was me at the time. Like, I felt like a class clown was kind of cool. It cheered me up a little bit. I was going through something, you know, but it wasn't Frankie's problem to deal with it, but he did. So, I would just start off my bad problems. Let's just go on our bad. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that was Dalia. RJ, what was?
So it started off as Novaland. So.
Oh, we going back to the room.
It's only going to make sense because when Novaland was there, it was just somewhere to go and play. So
before we rinsed and took off.
So just
it was place to go play.
It was no homework for me. It was a rec center. But when Frank got there and
he shut everything down
and start, you know, he had his vision and start, what is the word, Frank?
Implementing.
Yeah, that vision. And so when I started coming in and he had the table. Right there, as soon as you walk in, where all the kids are sitting, he'll be like, all right, you got homework? Like, for homework. I'm here to play. What are you talking about?
That's a structure?
Man. So, I always told Frankie, no, I always had homework. And so we'll sit at the table, and he always wanted us to do something at this table. If it's reading, just something. And I'm like, bro, I don't want to do none of this.
How old were you, real quick, before I forget, how old were you when I met you, RJ?
I was 9.
9. How old were you, Dalia?
Ricky used to kick me out a lot, so I want to say, that's a good, let's say, 8?
Were you 8? You're a little younger, but oh yeah,
I was
probably around 8.
Yeah, 8.
How old are you now?
24.
How old are you, RJ?
24.
Well, RJ and Jason, I met you when you were like 13, 14?
Yeah, I believe so. Do you remember the first words I said to you? I'm pretty sure you don't.
I vaguely do, but they're similar to RJ's. But what were yours?
I remember when I first saw you, and again, this is a rec center, and this guy's coming in here like, oh, I'm about to implement my vision. And I look out, and I remember walking up to you. I was like, I don't know you, and I don't like you. And I was just like, and the crazy thing is, I don't know what made me say that, but it was just that destructiveness of like not having guidance or a middle figure in my life. And it was crazy because you were a person that I didn't like, but then it was like, I really to love you. And I was like,
that.
Yeah. And I was like, it became a point to where I was like, where's Frankie? Where's Frankie? Like, I would go there and like, okay, where's Frankie?
Frankie's not here. I'm leaving.
Yeah. Like,
I'll be back tomorrow.
Right, exactly. And so it's just crazy.
So that was the first introduction.
That was the first introduction. Something that rewritten helped me heavily in that time. Like, I just remember looking at my high school transcripts and I was getting like D's, C's, like, and I was like, wow, thought I was getting better grades. But I remember vividly, like, when I think you came in like junior year, sophomore year, like my grades drastically started.
Oh, when they improved.
They improved.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When your freshman year, they were pretty bad.
We're not going to think about that.
It's awesome. Well, that's when I first met you. You didn't like me. Your grades are terrible.
How were you acting inside a learning center? Like, how was you acting?
We got specifics from Dalia. But yeah, his was like, I don't like you. I don't know you. And then you were just kind of like funky for a few weeks.
You're not my dad. Like,
I was a troubled child. I remember I used to like turn off the electrical box because, like, I got kicked out. Like,
yeah,
go do your homework. No, I don't want to. And it was just like, again, you're coming in, bringing that structure, and like, again, I was a destructive child. Like, I could do what I want. I don't need you. Like,
on that note, is there anything you specifically remember? Like, okay, like this guy, these people, this place doesn't hate me. Like, is there anything that happened where you're like, okay, they're trying to help me?
Yeah, I do. I was bad at math. I'm not as bad at it anymore. But Frankie, you knew I was failing math. Frankie got me a tutor. And so every day I came in, I don't remember his name, but we'll go upstairs and learn how to do like basic math, or he'd help me with my homework. And I was like, dang, like, no one has ever went this next step to help me succeed. And I was like, man, he cares. Where do you even find this guy? So that was for me. When he got me that tutor, he wasn't that great, but.
Because I'm going to remember his name.
It meant a lot.
Yeah, the act of getting. Right, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I get that.
I would say for me, I feel like Rewritten was always there to help me with like academics and like whatever I need, like school supplies, resources, you name it. But something that was beyond that was a time I think my mother reached out to me and was like, hey, Frankie, I'm kind of like short on rent and I believe you helped her out. And that was, for me, that was a moment where I was like, wow. Because I didn't see you as you. I saw you as like Rewritten. So like in my mind, I was like, wow, this program is like going beyond just like academics. It's like, yo, this guy is helping me keep my house. So for me, that was when I was like, okay, this program is going beyond like what I could even comprehend at that moment. And it really stuck with me. And I think that's why for me, I kept coming back, because I was like, if this random person at this program is willing to help my mother when she's like down, like it just kind of made me become loyal to not only you, but also the program in that moment.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. I'll start off with church and the Bible study. Those kind of touched me a lot, bringing in the pastors and everything, and then the bus shuttle that you got for us to go to church, and then my mom and everybody going. I want to say you gave me my Bible for that Christmas with my name on it. Really got me. And we all went out that day. Taking us to church was one of the biggest things for me.
Mm-hmm.
That opened me up a lot. Told Jermani he pushed me to go, but I went still. And it was great. It was great. Jermani was right. He told me, like, Ricky's good, you know. We're going to go to church. And I was like, I don't want to go to church. And then I went. It was like the best time of my life after then.
Yeah, and speaking of, so like I mentioned earlier, the fatherhood of God, the person and work of Christ, like that's our ultimate. Like at the end of the day, if you got better grades but never heard about Jesus, like it didn't matter to us. So good thing you mentioned that. And I remember your brother Jermani would sit in the church by himself. Like we'd all go together, but he would always be sitting there with his Bible, just reading it. And I'd be like.
My favorite person.
Sorry.
Don't start that. Your favorite person. He was his favorite person.
But, okay, let me focus. No, I'm good. I just remembering him, because I remember he would do that. I'd be like, Jermani, you all right? And he'd be like, yeah, I'm just reading, you know, this part or whatever. But, so, I think I remember that vividly, because I remember he would do that all the time. But anyway, so, like, at what point or in what ways did Rewritten, like, point you guys to God as Father ultimately? Because I think that's our big thing, is that like God is your Father, but beyond that, you are a child. And so like, in what ways did that, like, did you experience that being a part of Rewritten?
I want to say it started off with you like asking us things like, what do we want to be in life? Coming around and doing activities with us, which is golly activities. That was really good for us, because we used to always go out. You know, everything you did was more with Christian in it. We start to notice like, we were being bad, but I started to see the Christian stuff that was coming in, and it was coming in strong. And I was like, he don't just want good for us. He wants us to be loved by someone to let us know that we're still loved regardless. You know what I mean? So that was big on me. That was big on me.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Bibles. We've given away hundreds of Bibles. Did we put your name on it?
These ones were for Christmas. You took us out. We all, it was like 6 p.m. and we stayed till like 8. They had a little nice little thing for us. We all went out and everyone got a present. And I opened mine. The other mine was my name on it in gold. So the gold Bible.
I feel like for me, I was always religious, but like being around you and Rewritten, like you guys actually gave me that opportunity to continually go to the church. Cause like I would want to like learn about God, but it was like, I didn't have that opportunity to be like, all right, let me go to a church. Like you guys gave me the church and you gave me the consistency of going to that church. And also, I mean, I got baptized. You know, it was me, Xavier, I think Kieran.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, ultimately I feel like you guys brought me closer to God because I was like reading my Bible and stuff like that. And I, for some reason, this kind of made me going off topic. When I got baptized, I'm like, all right, I'm saved. I don't need to do any more work. And I remember after I got baptized, like more trials and tribulations and like troubles started coming. I'm like, what is going on? I got baptized. Like God should be protecting me. And I remember I would come and have a conversation with you and you would kind of like guide me. Like, hey, like getting baptized was just like the first step. Like that's like walking through the door. Like now you got to actually do the work and like be consistent with God and like follow his commandments and stuff like that. So again, not to ramble too much here, but yeah, you guys helped me like kind of in the, like get in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, that's that sanctification process. That's a, kind of a, one of those big words, but it's the process of becoming more holy, you know, from glory to glory to glory, the Bible talks about. And so that's, you know, our hope is that we're just one stepping stone. And whether we ever see you guys again or whatever, we've given you some tools for the road, for the journey ahead, where it's like, okay, they said go this way. Like we're just an arrow pointing you guys to the fatherhood of God. Like that's our ultimate goal. So if we know you for a month, 2 years, 5 years, like any time we spend with you, it's that way. You know, we're just arrows. Do you guys remember any specific conversations, myself or with other people, that kind of stick with you and have like helped guide you, like these little pieces of like being equipped? Like, is there anything that you, and if there's not, if you're like, no, I don't remember nothing, that's totally cool too. But is there anything myself or someone has shared with you at some point where you're like, you think about it or has stuck with you?
I guess when I got older, when you gave me a heck of a reality check when I tore my ACL. And he was like, called me. I'm in bed still. It's like, come up to the center. Let's talk. He went to the center on crutches and you're like, so what's next? Like, and I felt so disrespected. Like, what do you mean what's next? I'm about to heal. I'm about to go play football. He was like, no. It's like, have you applied to any colleges? I was like, no. He was like, let's set your deadlines. Where do you want to go? You missed that deadline. He said, what's next? He was like, you're only focused on football. What do you want to do with your life? I said, football don't work. What are you doing? He brought you up. He said, Jason played football. He was great. He's not playing now. I was like,
that's amazing. It was true, but it's crazy.
He said he had the grades, he had everything, and he's not playing. He was like, let's sit down and apply for a college. That's when we applied to Cal State San Bernardino.
Oh, yeah.
And we got accepted and went for free. I didn't have to pay a dime to go to school, but you just making me think about more than just football. Changed my mindset. Like, what is next for you in life? Football is not next. Not saying give up on your dreams, but it's like, let's look at where you at right now and where you want to be, because you're not doing anything or where you want to be in life. So that stuck with me. I bring that up all the time. I don't know where I'd be if we didn't have that conversation. Probably still in bed.
Oh my goodness.
He had that conversation with you after he had that same conversation with me. I was in the same boat. It was kind of like, I feel like being here in Colton, or we're in San Bernardino now, but in Colton, we just stuck in that bubble where it's like, we only see one path out, and that's sports, entertainment, you name it. And so you had that same conversation with me and then had it with my little bro here, Craig, using me as an example. But so not to use that same example, the next one was when I was actually going to college, not for sports, but just academics. I don't know if you recall, I'd had those two opportunities. I had the Arizona College.
That oh, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that one was like, all right, I'm going to be paying like $30,000 every year out of pocket versus like San Jose. That one was free. And you were kind of giving me that reality check because I still had that, like, I want to go Division I. I want to go to the big school. And you literally had to hit me down like, look, you could go to school for free or you could go and like pay this money. And I'm like, well, what if my friends are going to think I'm cool if I go here? Like, forget, like I wasn't even worried about the $30,000, which is obviously crazy. But you ultimately, like, again, gave me that reality check. Like, hey, like, you need to think not only in this present, but your future. Like, you could go to school, graduate, and have no debt. And, like, for me, I had to really, like, sit back and kind of, like, think, like, okay, who am I actually doing this for? Am I doing this for other people to look cool, or am I doing this for myself? And so if it wasn't for you, I probably would have went to that big school for, you know, the glamorous image, but then I would have been in debt versus like going to school, graduating, and not being in debt. And so I ultimately went the debt-free way, but that was a very pivotal conversation for me.
Started off with what I was listening to, music, because if you know Frankie, it was all gospel. I was like, can we change the radio station? Frankie wouldn't say nothing. He just turned it up. And just smile at you.
Oh, I thought you meant change the volume.
And so it was just what I was feeding myself. And anytime we had hard conversations, you always brought God into it. And I didn't. I never understood. Like,
it's like this guy's always talking about Jesus.
I'm like, God, Frank, I'm hungry. Like,
Jesus will feed you. Here's his other chill food.
You always brought God into conversations and Jesus and forgiveness and love. And I understand until I got older. We sat on the couch at the center across the street. And I was like, I'm not religious. I just believe in Jesus. He was like, do you believe in Jesus died on the cross for your sins? I was like, yeah, you're Christian. Like, no, I don't want to be put in a category. And he was like, you're confused right now.
Yeah, we had no hope in that area. Never hope, like literally from all the areas. It was like, where's that center you go to? I'm like, you have to sign up. Your mom has to come bring the papers and come. And you only have to live in the Novas. Are you sure? Like, I'm like, no, I think you only have to live in the Novas. But you can go ask Frankie if you want. But I used to try to drag everyone down.
That was the first couple of years. Yeah.
I was like, this
yeah,
is
and then
good.
We opened it up.
So. Yeah, big. Because you was like, it's so much kids here and I can't help and I need your mom's because say you're way on the other side. Like, we need papers. How did your mom get you away on this side? You're like 5 miles away from home. Like, yeah, we just heard about you. He's like, well, go here. Take your mom this paper. Go sign it and then we'll talk about it. Yeah. You look very good.
That's funny. I remember kids would walk up. You Mr. Frankie? Yeah. Hold on, mama. I remember, yeah. But there's a couple areas I want to just dive into before we wrap up. But you guys mentioned it a few times, forgiveness. And, you know, we talk a lot about healing and restoration. Like, that's what rewriting looks like. It looks like there's healing and restoration that happens in people's lives, young people's lives. A big part of that is being able to forgive. Being able to forgive our fathers, our broken homes, sometimes our mothers who struggle. Because you can't start to heal and be restored if you can't forgive. But I think as Christians, as believers, we're able to forgive because we understand we need forgiveness. We are sinners. So if we can understand that we need to be forgiven by God, our Father, through the person and work of Christ, and this becomes whole and there's forgiveness there, then we can begin to forgive others. So what was that experience? What is that? You guys are still young. So, you know, for me in my 20s, I was still working through forgiveness. But what has that experience of forgiveness been like? One, to understand you need forgiveness, and two, to forgive fathers and family and those who have hurt you.
I didn't forgive for a long time, and me not forgiving and holding on to anger and just everything, my blood pressure was high. Why do I have high blood pressure at 23? I couldn't sleep. I had anxiety. It was so much going on. But once I start, that's when I start going to church heavily. Like, I'm in the church every Sunday, and I end up getting baptized that same year. And I was just letting go and forgiving and understanding what forgiveness is. It's not forgiving and, oh, but I didn't forget. And I didn't, no, that's not true meaning. Forgiveness. Like, but once I understand the true meaning and actually start forgiving, I start being more at peace. I didn't have high blood pressure anymore. I didn't have anxiety. I could sleep at night. This is not something that's weighing on me anymore. It's like something getting lifted off of your shoulders. Like, I forget you and I love you.
So for me, I feel like as my relationship grew with our father, spiritual father,
our real father,
the real, as I became closer, or at least started to understand how much of a sinner I was, and every time I pray and ask for forgiveness, that me understanding, like, hey, I'm crossing God every day, whether I know it or don't know it. And for him to be able to forgive me, like, I need to show that same forgiveness for other people. And I think that's how I feel like I'm still learning how to forgive, but that is one thing that is helping me to forgive. Because before that, I was a person, like, if you cross me, like, I wouldn't, like, I would be nice to you, but I would not forget that you crossed me. And, like, and if I can, I would get you back when the opportunity, like, I was in that mindset.
Yeah, vengeance was Jason's.
Yes, yes.
But odds.
But the fact that, like, God has shown me mercy and grace continually after I've done him wrong, I'm like, if he could forgive me, I need to forgive those who hurt me. Like, I'm not trying to put myself in God's shoes, but I'm, like, thinking, like, okay, if I could be forgiven, like, this person, this human being could be forgiven, if that makes sense. Like, I can't ask for forgiveness if I can't forgive those who cross me. Cause then it's like, I feel like I'm contradicting and it's not sitting well with me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine's probably started at the learning center, how bad I was. And you forgave me for all the things that I did, you know, cause I was bad. Probably it's the cuss and everything. I can't remember the bad things I did. I can't.
God empties those out. God empties all that stuff out. Good. And that's
and you shouldn't hold on to that. Yeah, no, I don't remember how.
Hold on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because I didn't mean any of that. I was just hurt. You knew what was
and I knew. Yeah.
So that's why you forgave us. And that's good.
The final part of this, I'm going to make a statement and you guys can take turns finishing it. If not for rewritten, I would.
Oh, Lord. Frank.
Jason, we'll start with you.
I have to give my life, like, everything that I've accomplished till today has been because of rewritten. Like, the structure this program has given me, the confidence that this program has given me. And not even that, like after I had graduated high school, I thought, like, oh, this program is only for people in high school. Like, you were still, not you, but the program was still there, like, throughout college whenever I needed help with, like, finances in terms of, like, knowing how to budget or just continual, like, life guidance. I felt like Rerenin was always that father figure. Like, if I felt like I needed someone's advice, then I couldn't go to my parents. Like, I would be like, oh, let me go to Rerenin because they have the answers. And, you know, you guys always help me out to the best of your ability. And so, again, if it wasn't for regretting, I'd probably still be here, just not with the right mind. I probably had, like, 5 kids, married to 2 different types of women. I don't know. Because I was a mess. And you guys really, like, you guys shaped me up. And, again, I feel like a lot of my accomplishments were because of the structure and the just all the teachings that you guys do here. So. That's kind of my spiel. Y'all are staring. Oh,
I'm not.
We're listening.
Y'all are intensely listening.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like the foundation and some stability for there to be growth or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if not for written, I honestly don't know where I'll be. Like, I can't see rewritten. Not being in my life. So if I take that out, I'm taking out college, like everything I dreamed of doing is because of like Rewritten giving me that extra push. When you have a single mother working 12, 16 hour shifts and you're home alone, I was at Rewritten. I was with the program. I was with April, you, just everyone. So without Rewritten, I honestly, I don't know. I don't know. I can't really tell you where I would
still be in bed.
Just still be in bed. Honestly, I think I'd be in the streets. I'd be in the streets more like I was outside at one point in time, but I was at Rewritten. So if Rewritten wasn't there for me, it's just this the only thing I have when my mom is at work is the streets. So yeah, I would be heavily involved.
The streets are loud.
Streets are loud.
They're like screaming in your ear.
And they're very accepting of everyone. So yeah,
they'll take anyone.
If it wasn't for Rewritten, I don't think I'll be as close to God as I am now or calm as I am. I definitely would be in the streets. But I do appreciate everything. Like when my brother passed, I seen how Rewritten came together. A lot of people that came from our church and how we used to like sing in there, they all came to his funeral and they all talked about it. Like, you know, it was just like yesterday. They remember everything about us. It was very, you know what I mean? It was inspiring for me. But also, I wouldn't have a good relationship with my mom. I feel like I wouldn't be as close as, like, I wouldn't be the person I am or the young lady I am today. Probably still, I definitely would be in the streets. I already said that. But I don't know. Because without God, I don't know what I would be. Without Rewritten, I wouldn't have been as close to God as I am. Because that was one thing that pushed me every day. Like, just to remember, it's always something to go back to, something, somebody to talk to, you know? If anything happens, like, hey, Frankie, I need a job, I can come to Frankie, you know, anything. Definitely when I was doing bad, I had a probation, I came here, cleaned up a little bit, got my, you know, not out the way, and they literally expunged my case. So I was like, you know, I'm just blessed, you know? I'll say blessed. Without Rewritten, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Well, I don't know the answer.
Oh, my goodness.
Very happy.
Answer.
Thank you for joining us.
No.
Anything you guys want to share?
Ricky,
like, without Rewritten, I'd still be seeking. What we talked about earlier, when we were searching for something and didn't know what we were searching mm-hmm. for, without Rewritten, I would still be searching. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I love that you said that. Yeah. I mean, that could be a whole, if you would three. But no, it's true. And I think part of, you see grown men and grown women in their 20s and 30s and 40s, and you like, what's, something's off. Like they look lost, something like where they're living their lives, whether they're on the streets or they got, you know, four marriages later and seven kids and from different, you know, whatever, it looks like a mess. Then when you dive into it, it's like they come from a broken home and they're repeating the behaviors because they're searching still. So I think people think, oh, it's, you grow up and get over it. But if you don't figure out that there's this void and gap and this thing you're needing, you're searching for the rest of your life. And we as believers know that ultimately, whether you come from a perfect or a broken home, that the only thing that can fill that void is Christ, is God the Father. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I love that you're saying that. And that's, again, you know, back to the heart of our mission is, here's what you're searching for. It's not Frankie. It's not, you know, the math tutor. It's not Miss April. It's not Rewritten the organization. But you were simply an arrow. And by God's grace, you can see the direction, and there's some clarity there. So the searching stops and the healing begins and the salvation begins and life begins. Before that, you're dead. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, where would any of us be? We'd be dead.
Look at you. You came a long way. Like, not just us from being kids. We see other kids now. You have kids. You're a good dad too.
Yeah, I grew up in a broken home. So, you know, no father around, but yeah, I have 5 children now. When I met you guys, I wasn't married.
Yeah, he was still there trying for us. Like, these kids are so bad, but you still woke up and was like, hey, I'm going to try because no one tried for me, so I'm going to try for them. And then,
I mean, it's just ultimately, you know, if this is God's will for this thing to continue and to do well and, you know, have more kids, then it will happen. But no, our hope is just keep going, like wherever you go, you know, closer and closer to the fatherhood of God. And yeah, and instead of the searching and seeking to fill the void, you understand like where the source of life is, you know, and that's what a good father does. Me as a father now, like my job is to point my 5 children, which is interesting because I think Rewritten was a good training ground. Like, oh, I'm not supposed to replace anyone's father. I'm supposed to point them to the true father. So now with my own children, I'm to point them to their true father. I'm just their earthly one. Mm. But my job is to say, here's your father over here.
That spirit really coming out of you, Frank.
And he has the patience. He's been dealing with this. So far, I say, you're 100% good dad at this point. You didn't deal with everything.
It's good.
Yeah, you guys are crazy.
There's no mess up. Oh. But
when I met you, your hair was full. Bulls.
Full black.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, now
this,
and they used to just really just call them over crazy.
It's not the kids. It's not the kids.
It's ball people.
Wasn't the kids.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, anything else? Any final closing thoughts, rude remarks, comments?
Frankie, the fuck? Just kidding. All right. Yeah, please.
Oh, man. That was a good conversation.
That was good. I froze up a little bit, Frankie. Nick, let me know the questions early before I come. I write it down on the paper.
Give us like a... Was it interview prep?
Are we still?
Fathered is a production of the nonprofit Rewritten. To learn more about Rewritten, you can visit rewritten.org.